Washington, D.C. This is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. If you want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Good evening and welcome to the first episode, the first of many of the Texas Warbird Report, coming to you live from the great state of Texas here in Fort Worth. And this is Zane Adams. We're ready to go on the air tonight. We've got an all-new show coming up tonight with some great fellow Texans talking about Texas Warbirds, Texas air show, vintage style. We'll be talking about the old Breckenridge air show here in a moment. But I want to let you guys that haven't listened in before know I'm Zane Adams. I've been doing Warbird Radio here for a while. And I'm back. We're back with this live show. We'll be live on a regular Tuesday evening schedule once a month, bringing you information and ideas from warbirds around Texas. We've got a lot going on in Texas with warbirds, a lot of vintage airplanes flying around. I mean, warbirds began, I think, in Texas, if I could say that, arguably, that with the CAF. Began back in the 60s, and I think they're the grandfather of the Warbird movement out there. And we've had great air shows through the years in Texas. We've got great museums now. We've got the Lone Star Flight Museum. The CAF is still in Texas strong. We've got the Wings or the Galveston, the Museum of Galveston, the Lone Star Flight Museum, the Cavanaugh Museum in Dallas. There's lots of warbirds flying around, and we hope to bring you little bits and pieces of it from across the state once a month to you. So thanks and welcome to Warbird Radio and the new Texas Warbird Report. I appreciate you guys being here. The studio line is open tonight, and that is... bear with me, folks. It's been a while since I've done this. But studio line's open tonight, and it is 478-787-4768. And we'll be taking your calls tonight if you guys want to call in and talk to our guest, have anything to say to them. If you have any reminiscences for Breckenridge, they'd most be happy to hear them. So. We'll get to him here. Dan Lynn is a local guy. He lives here in Colleyville, Texas, which is in the DFW area. And he's been a longtime Warbird fan, started back at Breckenridge. And we're also on the line with us is Brad Pilgrim. A lot of you folks know him out there in the world as Mexican Bob. And that's it goes back a long ways as well. But both of those guys are involved in the Warbird community. And Dan, are you there with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Tell us what you've got going here. You've written a book about Breckenridge.
Well, when Brad and I were throwing around our memories from air shows and which ones were our favorites and where we saw, you know, some of the coolest warbirds that we thought were flying the sky. So we were throwing around ideas for... what to do with our photographs, and Brad said he had a huge stack from the Breckenridge Air Show, and I mentioned that I had a pretty large quantity of photos. So I said, well, why don't we put those together, and we'll see if we can head towards putting a book together. And by the time he mailed me that stack of photos to just a few weeks ago, it was a 2.5-year project, putting all the photos together in one place, sending some emails back and forth to get some details down and tell some stories and get some quotes ready for the book. It finally came together a few weeks ago and made it into book form.
Well, great. And it's called Breckenridge Warbirds. And go ahead and give us a plug where people might be able to get a copy of that. And we'll go hit that at the end of the deal as well. But let's give people a shot here.
Okay.
Where are you going to be able to pick it up?
It's I saw where you there's a link on Warbird Radio that I saw was posted. It's available from Blurb, BLURB.com. Blurb.com is the publisher. And there's a search bar at the top of the website, and you can type in Breckenridge Warbirds, and the book will pop up. And that's available where you can purchase it online. There's actually a coupon code through the end of October, if you use the word cookies, COOKIES, through October 31st, the 15% discount. So,
bonus. All right.
Those are the places that's where you can order it.
All right. And for you guys listening here at home, go on to warbirdradio.com, click the down there it says Inside Warbird Radio, click on the show link, the Texas Warbird Report, and it'll come up with it says Quick Link, Breckenridge Warbirds. And that will take you to their Blurb site where you can purchase the book. How long does it take to get the book?
Usually could be 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
You order a copy, they print one for you and mail it to you.
Great. All right. It's the best way to do things, I think. So modern technology and book selling, right?
Yes, it works out pretty quick.
So, Dan, tell us a little bit of background about yourself. Where did you... And obviously, you in the book here, you say you started, you liked Warbirds, you're interested in the history. Sounds like me, in junior high, I checked out all the Warbird books in the library at school. And, the B-17 book by Jablonski was denied to me eventually because I was the only one in school checking it out, apparently, over and over and over. So it sounds like you're from the same cloth there.
Right. My parents tell stories of me playing with toy airplanes as a young boy, and then building model airplanes with my dad, and watching Black Jeep Squadron on TV, and so some of that early years was influenced by magazines, books, and stories of my grandfather in World War II as an infantryman, but his interest in airplanes. He had airplane pictures from World War II, and then watching a Stinson Voyager being rebuilt across the street from us here in Colleyville, and eventually getting my first little airplane ride in that Stinson. And then between air shows and just the growing up years, was just aviation immersed from just scooping up everything I could aviation related, air shows and publications. And it went from there into flying lessons and working on vintage airplanes and eventually aircraft ownership and just a full aviation lifestyle.
It sounds like you organically sort of got it going. It's the way most of us do it, I think. We've got history, we've got a little family history, a little interest, and it bubbles up in us. And I know we like what we like, right? So,
yep.
Yeah. And so you went to Breckenridge early on, apparently. You figured out, from magazines or books, that this air show was going on close to you.
Right. I picked up some magazines and saw some Breckenridge Warbird coverage and asked my dad how close it was. And he said just 100 miles away. And I was like, we've got to, check this out. And so the first year we went was 1987. They had been doing air shows in Breckenridge since 1978. We made our first trip out there in 87 and went through until the last show in the mid-90s. So it was something my dad and I just didn't want to miss. You could be in amongst the airplanes and see a lot of rare airplanes flying in that air show.
We'll bring Brad on. Brad, you there with us?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
So I'm doing okay. How y'all doing?
Doing well. Brad's coming to us live from the West Coast out there. He's Brad, you're retired from the Air Force now, and you're out playing the helicopter game, working out there in the Seattle area, the Northwest. And thanks for joining us tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So you're Breckenridge. You're a West Texas boy coming out of Snyder. And if anybody's out there doesn't know where Snyder is, it's, you know, look at your kitchen table, and it's about that flat and about that beautiful. We all know West Texas, or at least I do anyway. So, but Brad, how did you get to Warbirds?
My dad was a Marine, and I come from a long line of military people, and wasn't nobody that was an aviator as far as I can tell, other than one or two private pilots or whatever, but it was just, you know, being around the military my entire life. And when I was a kid, we would go up north of Snyder up to go dove hunting up in a little town called Savannah. And you could stand up on the cap rock, and we would look down on B-52s and C-130s from over at Dyess doing low levels. And I think that's probably where I started noticing airplanes, because I was a little kid. And in 1977, I was 4 years old, and we went up to Reese Air Force Base there in Lubbock for an air show. And, in fact, Chuck Gardner was there, too. We found out later me and Chuck were there at the same time. And you know,
I was probably there, too. In 77, I most definitely was there.
77, yeah. And me and my brother and sister, we were standing in front of a P-40 out there, and it was Joe Mabee's P-40, and we were standing in front of the line, the rope line, and Joe Mabee walked over, and my mom was taking a picture of us, and Joe said, you know, put them over here behind the rope, get them up by the airplane and get their picture. And so we got to crawl over the rope and get up right next to the plane and get our picture made. And I think I looked over and saw those teeth on that P-40 and everything, and it was sitting right next to Howard Pardue's -4 Corsair. And I just, for whatever reason, that moment I was just smitten. It's kind of like seeing a pretty girl for the first time that you just can't ever get out of your mind. And from that point on, I just went downhill with airplanes. And my dad was, he worked in the oil field after he got out of the Marines. And dad was working over in Breckenridge for Jimmy McMillan Sr. And Jimmy McMillan used to own, he had a Sky Raider and a Sea Fury and a T-28 and some other airplanes. He was one of the original Breckenridge Warbird guys. And somehow or another, they got to talking about airplanes or whatever, and dad said, you know, dad came back home on the weekend or whatever, and he said, hey, there's an air show there in Breckenridge. And we went back. It was Memorial Day weekend. We went back over for the air show, and I think there was maybe five airplanes there, something like that. There was a Sea Fury and a Corsair and a T-28 and maybe a couple of T-6s, and that was about it. And from then, it just became an annual trip. And even after I joined the Air Force, I think I made every Breckenridge Air Show from that point on, except for maybe two that I couldn't get leave or I couldn't get home in time to go to. I can't remember, but that's the way I remember my brother, my little brother, his wedding was on Sunday of the Breckenridge, or Saturday of the Breckenridge Air Show 1 year, and I had to make the very difficult decision, you know, influenced by my parents, obviously, to miss part of the air show so I could drive that 119 miles back to Snyder to be at my brother's wedding.
Oh, and, that's just terrible,
I'm still mad about that all these years later. But
that's
how I got into the record.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like me too. I mean, I grew up in Lubbock, of course, and so I was there at those three shows, and there was a few Warbirds there that I know, the P-40, I think we were probably standing there staring at the same airplane the same time. And cause I moved out of Lubbock in about 1980. So I was there every year at the Reese show. So that was one of my introductions as well. But,
yeah.
And for those that don't know about Breckenridge, I know there's some youngsters out there that probably, maybe listening tonight, that don't understand what Breckenridge was all about. And Dan, could you tell us a little bit about, I mean, how many airplanes do you think were at a Breckenridge show? And of course, they're all Warbirds, about 99% of them anyway.
Hey, and Brad might be able to interject too, but I mean, on maybe slow years, it might have been, you know, 30 to 35 warbirds, and on heavy years, maybe, 100 or more. That's my quick ballpark figure about how many airplanes showed up, and some from as far away as Canada and surrounding states in Texas. So it was well attended. And a few transient Cessnas and stuff just parking off to the sides, but most of the people in attendance were warbird owners coming to just enjoy the weekend in Texas and eat barbecue and sit around and tell stories and just enjoy some blue Texas skies.
Yeah, I remember the first Breckenridge I went to was probably 87 or so when I think may have been my first one, and I was flabbergasted at the rows and rows on the side runway, the diagonal runway, where they parked all the T-6s. And
yeah.
I'd never seen that many warbirds together at one time, much less, and they were all T-6s. You know, there was probably 20 or 30 or more sitting there on that diagonal runway. And it just, that was my introduction to Breckenridge right out of the box. It just blew my mind.
I remember that.
I think in 1985 or 86, one of those 2 years, I can't remember, there was like 140 airplanes there. And it was, I remember on the taxiway between the T-hangers over there where Howard kept his Corsairs and all that, there was, I want to say there was 9 B-25s lined up there nose to tail that entire length, and then 3 A-26s parked out there on the grass, out on the active runway, or the taxiway, I'm sorry. And then I think there was 17 Mustangs. There was like 11 Corsairs, like 6 TBMs. I mean, it wasn't like there was 100 T6s and 12 L4s and
right.
One or two Mustangs. It was, it was warbirds. It was, fighters and bombers and stuff like that. And what a lot of people, Breckenridge, of course it's long gone, sadly. And even if they started having to show again, it wouldn't be like it was, but it started out just basically as a fly-in. And, Howard Pardue, he would, he had two Corsairs, a Wildcat and a Bearcat, that he did air show routines in. And Howard would go all over the country from Canada to, both coasts here in the States, and would go to people's air shows for free. And in return, they would bring their air show, their airplanes to the Breckenridge air show for free. Everyone bought their own gas. I remember Howard always bought the oil. He was in the oil business and got it for a good price. But,
sure.
Everybody did this at their own expense. And, this is back when Mustangs were, a third the price they are now, and then Corsairs were still $110,000. And it was not uncommon at all to see people get their first, pilots, new owners, to get their first Warbird flight there. I can't remember who it was now, but someone that had bought a Sea Fury and was going to pick it up there, I watched him the very first time he got in a Sea Fury, through his two or three takeoff and landings, and then he flew it off to the West Coast or whatever. I just can't remember who it is, but it was not your average air show where people showed up, you paid your admission fee and stood behind the line. You roamed everywhere. You went everywhere out onto the taxiways. As long as you didn't get in the way of an airplane, it was fine. Later years, when the Chamber of Commerce took over the air show, became a little bit more businesslike, as necessity dictated that. Then the FAA started showing up and stuff like that. And, it became a little, I don't want to say less fun, but a little less loose with the rules.
Sure.
But, it was just a one of a kind. I've never been anywhere else, anywhere in the States that air shows were like that, that you could just come and go as you please. It didn't matter, you could be just a nobody who pulled up in a Chevelle and get out of your car. And next thing you know, you're eating dinner next to Tex Hill in the hangar. It was just you hate to use the word magical, but that's what it amounted to. I firmly believe that going to Breckenridge, my exposure to warbirds and airplanes at Breckenridge, is 99.9% responsible for me going the career path that I did with aviation in the military and being involved with warbirds and aviation now. It's nearly all due to what I learned and saw at Breckenridge. And some of my bad habits are due to what I learned and saw at Breckenridge at the late night parties. I have to admit that, too. It was a learning experience for a 17-year-old kid.
Sure. Folks, we're here talking with Dan Lynn and Brad Pilgrim about their new book, Breckenridge Air Shows. There's a link on the warbirdradio.com website there under our show page where you can purchase the book. And you guys give us a call. The studio line's open at 478-787-4768. And Brad, I have to agree, and Dan, it's the Breckenridge experience that I had was virtually what you're talking about. There's that many airplanes there. There's that many people. And it's not a big corporate, you know, fancy air show. You know, I don't remember in my mind, I don't remember any civilian acts. I know they were there, I think. I've had people talk about them, but, I don't remember any regular, you know, pits or extras or anything like that up doing flips. But, you know, I remember even in, I guess, the last show I went to, maybe 92 or 91 or 92 or so like that, there was you could get within, you know, 10 feet of the taxiway, you know, and you could roam the ramp. And Saturdays were, to me, even more fun than Sundays, because Saturdays were the fly-in, part of the fly-in day. They were the, like Brad says, it was more of a fly-in than an air show, but everybody flew. There was always a T-6 act or the Wildcat or a Hellcat or something out flying and doing some aerobatics. But there was always airplanes coming and going, three or four or five Mustangs to take off and then, you know, race around the field and come back, and B-25s. And, you know, I remember seeing a Mosquito out there and a couple of B-17s. I know Chucky, I went out there with Chucky as crew sometimes. And it just, you know, it, like you said, it was a magical deal. And the evenings were fun. I only spent one, got to go to dinner out there on Saturday night one time, and it was a whole lot of fun. I think there was a big pot of gumbo. There was a bunch of barbecue beef, shock and surprise for Texas, but a lot of big pit going, and it was a tremendous time. So, Dan, you guys were taking pictures out there. What kind of camera did you carry?
Believe it or not, my first year I was walking around right out there with the little thin 110 camera that had cartridges you dropped in, so a little 110, and then just a little point and shoot. You know, I had all different brands. I was just whatever I could get my hands on and throw some film in. And a few years later, I videoed with a giant VHS camera for 2 years and just dug that tape up recently to try to convert to DVD. But just walking around with a little point-and-shoot camera, and some of the pictures in the book, you'll see some of the airplanes look pretty close. And that wasn't a long zoom lens. That was just the Breckenridge experience. You could be right in there amongst the action and standing just, you know, maybe 20, 30 feet from the runway with Kermit Weeks taking off and his Mosquito and Howard roaring off in his Corsair. We had Wiley Sanders would have two B-25s and two Sky Raiders, and then Mustangs from all over the country. All that was just right there in front of you. So the pictures in the book are all just little point and shoot 35 millimeter camera from, you know, what Brad and I realized later was just two teenage boys out there wandering the ramp in amongst the action.
Right. Yeah. I know my dad didn't trust me with a 35 millimeter for a long time. So I was carrying the 110 for quite a while as well. So didn't take the best photos, but, you know, at least you were there taking pictures. I mean, I know I've got a bunch of pictures from out there, a little bit of video. And if you don't mind, I'm plugging my own YouTube video. I just posted a link on our Facebook page just now. It's from 1990 on Saturday flying day. It's video that I took on an 8mm camera and have put it to digital and uploaded it on YouTube. So there's a link there on our Facebook page, or Warbird Radio Facebook page. So check that out. It's kind of fun to see, you know. And I imagine you guys are in those videos somewhere, you know.
It was funny when me and Dan got to talking about this, well, even before the book project started, which I have to say the book is, I'll say 99.9% was the work of Dan. He did all the hard stuff. All I did was supply, you know, a stack of pictures and help him with captions and tell him a few stories. Dan's the one who is, should get all the glory for the book, and it is a really good book, and I'm glad to have my name on it. But there's a reason Dan's name is first on there, because he deserves to be first on it. But we were talking when we first started, you know, talking about having, you know, being at this air show at the same time. There's so many times that we had to have been standing within literally a few feet of each other.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Like we both remember looking at, you know, Kermit Weeks Mosquito and everything like that. We had to have been standing within 5 feet of each other when this was, you know, when this one incident was going on. There's a picture in the book of Bill Greenwood firing up the Spitfire, and me and Dan are on opposite sides of the airplane. You can tell by the smoke and everything else that it's the same shot. And we're blocked from each other by the vertical fin in the shot. I mean, we're nearly each other's pictures. It's really, you know, it's funny growing up in Snyder, which didn't have a whole lot of folks in it. I remember thinking I was the only person my age that cared anything about warbirds or airplanes in general, because nobody else cared anything about airplanes. And I just knew I was the one teenager alive who did. And it's so weird that, you know, me and Dan would be friends years later, and, you know, and a lot of other people too that I'm friends with now that were there, like Chuck Gardner again. Me and Chuck are real good friends, and, you know, we were within feet of each other. You know, when the Scatterbrain Kid P-38 crashed, we were within just a few feet of each other and didn't know each other at the time. So it's strange what a small world the warbird world was back then, and it, you know, with spectators or whatever, and it's still a small world today. With the same people, but a lot of us have been fortunate to go from just being spectators to actually having something to do with the airplanes, to operate them and maintain them or whatever. So it's neat to watch how all of us with that same interest at that age all kind of grew up in the same, you know, and still have that very same interest, you know, all these years later.
Yeah, I was looking at the book this evening, and it is amazing, that picture of the Greenwood's two-seater Spitfire, and It is. It's the same photograph. Which one of you guys was shooting from the upwind side, or the which one was shooting into the sun? So
Dan was on the right side of the airplane, and I was on the left side, if I remember correctly. Because you can see the right at the side of the vertical fin, you can see my dad's hat sticking out.
Oh, okay.
I'm 100% sure that's my dad standing there, and all you can see is just his hat. So, I mean, we had to, we're blocking each other in the picture,
but
we're friends, you know.
It's pretty funny. It's an awesome shot. And I know I've run across, I have a picture of the CAF's B-26 Caroline that I've seen. It was posted on a forum, and somebody else posted a picture, and we're on the opposite sides. We can see each other's feet, you know. So
yeah,
it's amazing when that kind of stuff happens. And, you know, and like I said, I've been running around those ramps and running around. We've all run in the same circles. I know, you know, we all know the same people, but now, but we had no clue we were there. And I agree with you, Brad. I felt like I was, you know, a kid on the moon when I was yakking and talking about these things. And, you know, I would come home, come to work or come to school the next day and say, yeah, the, you know, 1,000 plane raid was on TV last night. Anybody see it? Now everybody got a blank stare because, you know, I wasn't watching the Cowboy game. You know, I was watching something else. So.
Well,
we have ideas with airplane nerds.
Yeah, me and Dan both have said that what the thing that we regret the most about all those years of Breckenridge was that we didn't take more pictures of the people that made it such an event. That made both of us wished we'd have done that. And now, sadly, you know, so many of those guys are not around anymore. And a lot of them still wouldn't be that old, but, you know, through just bad luck and attrition and other things, a lot of them aren't around anymore. And I dearly wish, and I know Dan does too, that we'd have took more pictures of the people that made it the event it was, because there was nobody there who was better than anybody else. I mean, everybody there was no, it was a bunch of, you know, well-off people who owned airplanes, but nobody acted like they were. I mean, it was just everybody ate off the same plate of barbecue, you know? I mean, it was just, it wasn't like the most, a lot of air shows you go to today. There's a little bit of them and us, and at Breckenridge it wasn't like that. Maybe it would be today if the show was still going on. I'm not sure, but it was, I wish we had more pictures of the people. And there's things that you couldn't get in pictures that I thought, that me looking back at it, were just really funny moments. Like, I remember Howard Pardue getting the Spitfire stuck in the mud, and like 20 people getting out there and pushing on it, and somebody telling Howard if he'd get out of the airplane and help push, they could probably get it to move faster. You know, and you know, Connie Edwards, his albatross, this is in the book, it went off the taxiway and sunk in the mud, and Connie opened up the side hatch there and yelled, you know, hamburgers and beer for sale. You know, and it was just one of those funny episodes that you wished you had a picture to convey how funny it was.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here. Do a little commercial break, earn some money for the station, and we'll come back. I want to talk about people, and I mean, that's what makes warbirds and what makes everybody's life goes around is the people here. So we're going to get a few stories and swap a few stories here right after a break. We'll be right back.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
They say that size doesn't matter, but we all know that's a lie. Size always matters when you're talking about trucks or that steak that you ate last night. Don't fall for those cheap gimmicks or stupid commercials. You want to increase your size, do it the old-fashioned way. Get yourself some man tires. That's right, man tires. A good set of man tires can change any wussy wagon into a respectable man-mobile in minutes. Just visit mymantires.com and see what you've been missing. That's mymantires.com. Men, the time is now. Log on to mymantires.com and tell them you want some of them man tires. Man tires, the original male enhancement. Available now, only on mymantires.com.
Supporting bees, the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Welcome back to the Texas Warbird Report here on warbirdradio.com. It's our new show. We're starting a new season here, and we've got a lot of new shows coming up. I know we've got Matt Jolly's on his does his show weekly here, Warbird Radio Live, right before our show. I know we've got the RC Scale Builders shows left. The World War One guys are out there. The Wings Over New Zealand, I believe, is still with us. There's a lot going on Warbird Radio and a lot coming up new. So join us. Make sure you hit the Listen Live button on warbirdradio.com. It's up running 24 hours a day, so if you miss something here, you can always click that and listen to it. It's a great way to hear the station. I don't tell the boss, but sometimes I have it on at work, sitting there listening. Sometimes here, if I'm working on some photographs or something else here at the house, it's on. It's a great resource, and it's a lot of fun to listen to. They've got some real nuts on the show, on the station, and it's always fun to listen. So the studio line is open at 478-787-4768. You can also live chat with us here on warbirdradio.com. There's a little live chat button there, and it's up and running. There's a few people on there. Hi, Dave in North Carolina, and Jody. You guys appreciate you being there. So it's good fun to have. So I think Matt has something to add. Matt,
no, I'm sitting here having my beverage tonight. Hopefully you are as well. And sure. You're doing a great job tonight. I just want to throw that out there. I love the new show. I think it's wonderful. I'm glad to have my Texas driver's license still in my wallet.
Amen, brother.
And it's current, and, you know, when the state, the great state, God's country of Texas decides to secede, then maybe I can still get back in, even though I'm up here in Virginia right now. But
You're still in the South, though. So.
Yeah, we are right on the blip. I mean, I can literally see the North from here. I'll be the first alert in the event of another attack of Northern aggression. I'll be sure to sound the alarm. But, no, I wanted to tell Brad and Dan, number one, enjoyed seeing it at Oshkosh. Really cool to hang out. And thanks for bringing the book by. I've seen it. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal book. But I'm sitting here looking at pictures. I hope my mom's not listening to this show. But I'm telling you, she took some terrible airplane pictures. I mean, just Oh, get the magnifying glass out. You know, oh, there it is. That's what she, you know what I mean. Small cameras, just not the same. But nonetheless, got a lot of pictures of people. So if you can identify the backs of heads, I'll send these to you because I guarantee you we're all in them. I'm sure, I know it. So if you were at Breckenridge or down in Harlingen or wherever, you know, with my time in the CAF, my family's time early on in the 80s and up until like the early 90s and whatnot, I'm sure you guys are in there. So it's kind of cool to see that. It really is one big family.
It's cool. Backs of heads.
Got a lot of those. Got a lot of backs of heads. So we'll have to find Chuck Gardner's and post it on there because I'm sure he's in there. So, and by the way, you have the coolest. You really have the coolest theme song of any show on the station. I have not heard Dave Homewood yet. I haven't heard his theme song from down in New Zealand, but I'm just saying, Zane.
Yeah, you need to get with our big skies here.
It does. You need to get like Robert Duvall on there and somebody talking about warbirds or something. So you're an
Robert
oil tycoon.
Or Barry Corbin or one of those guys.
Exactly. You're an oil tycoon. You're entitled to host this show. So I'm going to sit back and keep listening. I'm enjoying it. Good stuff.
Thanks. Well, people, Dan, you got a person story. You got what's your favorite personal memory of the people there at Breckenridge?
I think one of my probably most memorable moments was my dad and I became acquainted with Ed Vesely, who flew with Ronnie Gardner and Jim Foss and Mike Burke at the Lone Star Flight Museum. And Ed Vesely just kind of brought us in, and most of those guys enjoyed telling airplane stories to us and relating their flying experience. And if I hadn't seen one of their airplanes before, then somebody scooped me up and threw me in the B-25 and showed me around. And their F-7F Tiger Cat had been a year out of restoration, and they threw me up in the cockpit of that and gave me the cockpit tour and showed me their newest restorations. And Ed Vesely had just started flying Lone Star's Hellcat at the time. And he looked at me and said, I'm going to go fly the Hellcat, you know, follow me. And he said, here, you know, you be crew chief and hold my helmet and help me get strapped in and send me off on my flight. So, you know, as a 15, 16 year old kid, you know, some of these, like Brad was saying earlier, these guys just, you know, it wasn't us and them. It just was here. You're one of us because of your love for the history, love for the airplanes, and of course, just being around the noise and the smoke and the smell and all that was just exhilarating. But, you know, jumping up on the wing of an F-6F Hellcat and
there's a picture of you in the book standing on the Hellcat wing. I guess your dad took that.
Right, my dad took that picture, and it shows me
with your just about to hop shirt, down off the hat, and.
Yep, I've got my huge tall hat on and my Flying Tigers T-shirt on, and it just was, again, was that aviation immersion that just had me sucked in, and Ed Vesely was an aviation mentor of mine that gave me a lot of advice in getting my pilot's license and sending me off, and years later I got a T-6 ride with him and flown around in his cub that he has, and now these days Ed Vesely's the CAF hell diver pilot. So
still flying, still having a good time. I remember a little personal story for me. I mean, I didn't know these guys. I wasn't up close enough. You know, I knew Doc Hospers, and that was and the guys that hung around the Vintage Flying Museum, the Chucky crowd. I knew those guys and a few of those pilots, but I knew Bill Arnott a little. He used to come by and talk with us at the B-17, and I remember sitting out there on the ramp one time, and he was out flying, and they were really ripping it up with a couple of the B-25s and blasting the field real well, and they came back and landed, and I remember him shutting down the airplane, and he had the window open, and he yelled, "Woo-wee, that was fun." You know, he just had this smile on his face, and was just having a time of his life. And I just remember him saying that, you know, looking up there going, and he's going, "Yeah, that was great fun." You know, so I know they were having fun. I know they loved flying with each other out there. And, I remember Connie Edwards one year I was out there, brought in the Albatross, and I know he took off, and he says, "Now y'all watch me close." When he took off, I remember him getting the airplane and telling us to watch. And when he took off, he didn't get but 3 feet off the ground out there, out across the cattle pasture, headed south. And there was a tree line out there, and he just barely bumped up all across that tree line and was headed south. And all we could see was the tail of that Albatross for miles out there. So, you know, he was showing off in his own way in his big Albatross. So it was pretty fun. He was always a colorful character around the airplanes. Like you said, Brad, hot dogs for sale, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so tell us about Tex Hill, Brad.
I met Tex coming out of the porta potty, of all places. He came out of the porta potty and was like, "Hey, Tex Hill, yeah," and then we walked over and he was standing by his pickup truck, and we sat down on the tailgate and just visited. I met George Gay there. I met Paul Tibbetts there. I met, there were these guys who were heroes, Rex Barber and people like that, these guys that you read about in history books, they just walked around there like they were nobody, you know, like they're no press agents or anybody like that. And they were happy to stop and talk. They were happy to sign autographs and take pictures or whatever, and they didn't care what you talked about. They talked to you about anything. And years later, Tex Hill, when I was in the Air Force in South Carolina, we had a Flying Tiger reunion in my squadron, the 17th Airlift Squadron, sponsored them, and I had to help, Tex Hill, I had to help him around. He was getting a little older at that point. And he remembered me from Breckenridge. I hadn't talked to him in 20 years or whatever, and he remembered me and talked to me. And, hey, I haven't seen you since Breckenridge, you know. And he remembered me till, you know, the last time I saw him, just, you know, a year before he passed away or whatever. It just, but the normal people who were there, just the common people who were just Warbird owners, that was the first place I ever met Jerry Janes. And, you know, Jerry Janes, he owned that Sea Fury Cottonmouth, and he owned the Albatross Cottonmouth, and he was a real good friend of the Howards. And Jerry lives up here in Canada, and so I see him occasionally up here now. But I rode with Jerry and Howard and Howard's Staggerwing, and I was in the back seat, and Jerry and Howard both were well over 6 foot tall. And Jerry was a big old boy. They just filled up the whole front end of that airplane. And we're up there flying around in it or whatever, and the wind shifts, or for some reason, I can't remember, they were having a discussion on whether to land on the grass beside the runway or on the runway. And they were arguing with each other over who was going to land the airplane and who would be the better pilot, and who would be most likely to destroy it in a botched landing attempt. And this whole time, I'm like, I don't know, 13. I'm sitting in the back seat thinking, this is how I die. Two of the greatest Warbird pilots in the world fighting over who's going to do it better. And it's come to find out they were just basically making me uncomfortable for the fun of it.
Landed
on the other side of the runway and then went back up on the pavement, then back down in the grass just to do it, and then Jerry looked around and goes, well, which one of you? He said, Howard, I thought you were flying. And Howard's like, no, I'm not. And they're looking at me, and my eyes had to be as big around as a hubcap. They're just laughing. They thought it was hysterical.
Gotcha. But,
no, it was
that's funny. That's great. Hazing the little kid. That's about typical, right?
Yeah. Oh, they're horrible. They're horrible to me. Looking back at it, they did things to me that the very first time I met Connie Edwards, out there at Breckenridge, I was a little kid. I didn't know how old I was. I was a little kid. And I walked up there and I asked if I could look inside his PBY. And he said, do you like beer? And I said, oh, yeah. He handed me a can of Budweiser. I'm like 10, 12, something like that. I just handed it back to him. And he just laughed. But he was just as serious about it as he could be, if you know Connie, you know. But it was a fun time. I've been fortunate in my career, military and Warbird career, both, to do a lot of neat things and go a lot of cool places, and there's just nothing quite compares to Breckenridge back then. And even now, I mean, I never lived there, but even now, whenever I go home visit my family or whatever, I try to make a point to get through Breckenridge, and I've taken my wife and my daughter through there, and I walk down, you know, of course now Howard's gone and Bill Arnott's gone and things are not the same as they were, but I walk down there and I can point at the hangars and tell my wife and daughter who had which airplanes in those hangars. I can still, to this day, look into the hangar that Howard kept the Corsairs and TBM in, and I can tell you which airplane was parked in what spot the first time I saw them. That is just so imprinted in my mind. It was, you know, other than my dad, Howard and Bill were probably the two biggest male influences on my life as far as being an aviator and going into the military and, you know, flying as a career and everything like that. Because I was nobody, and I'm still nobody, but they were nice to me for whatever reason. They just chose to be nice to this little, 11-year-old kid, and it changed my life. It really did, and I try very hard to remember that when I'm out with Fifi or with some of the museum airplanes up here in Washington or whatever, and at the end of the day, and you're tired of answering questions, tired of being bothered, quite honestly, and you never know when that next kid might wind up being the next you.
Right. So somebody's going to take your B-29 job in 20 years. It's probably
going to be somebody you're gonna talk to. They'll have to fight me for the seat, but I guess someone will try it eventually.
And for those folks out there who don't know, Brad's one of the flight engineers for the only flying B-29, Fifi. And good on you for that job. That looks like a eight-handed job to me, looking at that panel there. The real boss of the airplane out there behind the pilots in Fifi. So that's a cool gig.
Yeah, I'm it's pure luck that I'm able to do it. That's all. It's just pure luck. Every time I get to do it, I just assume it's going to be the last time I do, and you know, just try to treat it like it's the last time for a couple of reasons. One, you have to be careful because you don't want to be the person who destroys the last flying B-29. That's what I always tell people. But two, you know, someday it will be your last flight for one reason or another. It may just be the last time you get a chance, and you may land and the FAA said that's it, you know, flying's over. You know, who knows? So someday it will be my last time to do it. So I just try to enjoy it as much as I did the first time. I'm not nearly as scared as I was the first time I did it, but I'm still not 100% comfortable with it. I'll tell you that.
I don't think that's a good way to. I don't think you never need to be terribly comfortable in an airplane. So, and Dan, you're a pilot, right?
Yes. So I learned to fly in '91. I did actually fly my first airplane, a little Taylor craft. I did make a flight into Breckenridge in the Taylor craft. That was kind of one of those dream flights for me when I got the airplane, was to go to Breckenridge and make it for the air show. And believe it or not, they were having one of the Friday or Saturday night barbecues. And I said I was going to pull the airplane out, and I gave some airplane rides to some of the other Warbird owners and their family members, and had a good time doing that. Even with this little 65 horsepower, you know, little airplane, it was no Hellcat or Mustang, but it was fun to fly in Breckenridge.
That's real flying there.
that was fun. Years later, I bought a Cessna 170. Recently sold it, but I had it for 17 years, and fly vintage airplanes and more for the history and the fun. But another, if I may interject, and Brad and I think both agree, for the people is the Azell family that's out there running a restoration shop. That family and their employees were always hospitable, always you know, there to help you. I mean, the year I flew my Taylor craft in, the little handheld radio died, and they ushered me into the office there and let me plug my radio in while it charged during the air show. And I think I don't know them really well. Brad knows them a little better than I do, but every time I've visited there, I've flown in and dropped in for a visit, and they're always hospitable. And Nelson would throw us in the back of the pickup truck and say, "You got to see this airplane." And he just had this excitement of, "You got to see this airplane." He drove us down to another hangar and showed us the Kermit Weeks B-25 that was just happened to be flying through town. And this was years after the air show, but whether it was during the air show time and then even today, the Azell family loves the history and does amazing work at their restoration shop and continues to be hospitable to recent visits.
Yeah, the Azells have always been... Every time I've been out there, they've been real friendly to me as well. I don't know them from Adam, but I've showed up out there a few times just to, you know, happen to be coming through and say, you know, "Hey, can I look around?" And they look around, come on. And they drag you out in the hangar and show you everything, you know, and it's just that you're right. They're super friendly people and they do some amazing work out there. So, hey, we've got a call. Hang on, guys. Dave Homewood from Down Under, New Zealand. Welcome to the family here on Warbird Radio. Dave, you there? Hello, Dave.
Hello.
Well, maybe he's not there. Hello, Dave.
Well, Zane, Dave was there. Yeah. I think I heard him briefly, but it's a long way to New Zealand, as we'll learn next week. Always not a sign of things to come. Dave, you there?
I am here. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You can't hear Zane, can you?
All I could hear was like the ocean.
Yeah, well, he's there with you right now, and he can't hear you for some reason. We'll have to.
And I can't hear Dave. So
yeah, and Zane can't hear you. So next week we'll get the technology straightened out. I don't know why that's not working for some reason.
I can just barely hear a little noise there.
Yeah, very, very bizarre. But nonetheless, we'll get that straightened out next time. Hey, Dave, we'll talk to you next week.
A little tighter.
Hold the string tighter, Dave. Hold the can in the string tighter, Zane says. So we'll talk to you next week for the RNCAF show. Okay, bud?
Okay, take care.
Take care. All right. That's pretty cool there, Zane, listening to from New Zealand.
Zealand. Yeah, that's a long way down there, isn't it?
I'm going to have to study this board here. That's really bizarre. It was working, you know, when we took the call last year. what could possibly have gone wrong?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Brad, you were going to say something about Ezel here.
I have to say the Ezels absolutely are the most top-rate people you will ever find. All of them, Nelson and Dude and the kids, they are all just absolutely top-rate people. A Breckenridge-related story had nothing to do with the air show, but when I was flying C-130s at Dice, this was 1998, and Nelson had Lou Shaw's Mustang down in Abilene for the air show. And I walked up to him. He was getting ready to go back to Breckenridge. I said, Nelson, I said, how do I get a ride back to Breckenridge with you in that thing? He said, all you got to do is find you a way home. Well, you know, Abilene and Breckenridge are only about 60 miles apart. So I thought, wow, I didn't think he would say yes. But I ran right over and grabbed my phone. This was the very early days of the cell phone. And called my wife, who at the time was about, my daughter was born a week later. So she was very pregnant, as my mom would say. Wow. And I called her, and I said, hey, I need you to come to Breckenridge and get me. And she said, where's Breckenridge? I said, call Ozzy, my best friend Ozzy. I said, call Ozzy, he'll tell you where it's at. And I hung the phone up, and I went and jumped in the Mustang, and off I went. Well, it took us forever to get to Breckenridge because it was, you know, we had to do the scenic route and all that. Well, we got there and cleaned the plane up and all that. About 2 hours after we got there, with the Ezels patiently waiting on me there at the hangar, my very pregnant, very mad wife showed up, my best friend in tow, and just ranted and raved about why would you take a one-way airplane ride? That's the dumbest thing you've ever heard. And my best friend Ozzy looked over there and he goes, you don't understand. It's a Mustang. You don't say no to that. Well, my daughter is now, she'll be 16 in November. And her mother is still mad about that. 16 years later, her mother is still mad about having to come get me from a one-way Mustang ride. And oh. So I remind Ezels, hey, first time I really got to know y'all real well is tonight my wife got mad at me for faking her come get me.
That's funny. That's great. That's great. I made my wife do I took a one-way airplane ride last week in a little airplane called Diamond Lil, and it was a one-way ride. She had to come drive across DFW to come get me, but she didn't make her mad because I took her out to dinner, I guess. So you gotta rub the lamp just right sometimes, right?
I guess so. It's funny, though, because even now my daughter or her mom will mention it and be mad about it, whatever. My daughter, because she's almost 16, she'll say, well, Mom, it was a Mustang ride. You don't say no to that. She just gets mad all over.
Exactly. Oh, great, great. Well, guys, I really appreciate you being on tonight. Congratulations on the book. Again, you can go to Blurb to pick up the book. It's called Breckenridge Warbirds. There's a link to it on our show page. Just go to the homepage of warburgradio.com, and there's the first story there is the Texas Warburg Report. Click on that. There's a little link there in red says Breckenridge Warbirds. Click that link. Takes you straight to the Blurb page where you can buy your own book. And, again, your secret word, Dan, to get in early to get the book with the discount is cookie, right?
It's cookies. COOKIES, cookies.
All right, more
than
one.
Their discount code for the month. So,
all right. Well, that's great. It's a beautiful book. I'm enamored with the photos. I hope this brings more photos out. I hope there's more people out there can bring some pictures forward. I've got a few. I'd be happy to give them to you if you're going to do book two. I think that would be a great endeavor, and they're beautiful photographs. You guys did real well with your teenage film eyes, and we really appreciate the time and effort you put into doing it. It's a great memories.
Very great memories. Yep, it was a good time.
Yeah. Thanks for being on tonight, and folks, that's about all we've got tonight for Warburg Radio's new show, the Texas Warburg Report. We'll be on next month on a Tuesday evening with a new story from a new corner of the great state of Texas. We're really looking forward to this show. There's a lot of great people and great stories to be told about World War II and other airplanes, old airplanes, old military airplanes that we call warbirds here in the state of Texas. And I'm really looking forward to sharing the stories with you. And hope you guys can call in on Tuesday nights, and the studio line's always open. It's always fun to have an interactive show. I know Matt will enjoy it weekly here on Warbird Radio Live. So for Matt and the rest of the great state of Texas, the Texas Warbird Report, St. Adams, thank you for tuning in.